Well, now into that personal story about Mosul. When journalist Michael Goldfarb covered the U.S.-led invasion of Iraq in 2003, his translator was a man from Mosul. They talked about returning to Mosul for lunch when it was peaceful again. And then the translator was murdered after he started a political magazine. And now that ISIS has been defeated in Mosul, Michael says it doesn't much feel like a victory in London, where he is. He joins us from the BBC. Michael, welcome back. And I can't imagine what it must be like to watch this, to see Mosul destroyed.
Well, it's been extraordinary. I mean, I see the pictures everywhere, Now that we have drones to add to our ability to see things, when you see a drone shot of the old city, a place I've been, it clutches at the throat and the gut. And, you know, the city, I don't know how it's going to function. But, you know, for me, it is a deeply emotional thing to see.
Well, because of your ties to Ahmed Shalkat, your translator. Now, I will never forget, Michael, the picture of you sprawled in a trench on the ground in the early fighting. There's a huge explosion in the background we can see. You're with this translator. This is at the start of the Iraq War. You, of course, in your brown corduroy jacket and your white socks and loafers, ever the erudite reporter.
No, I was wearing boots. White socks, yes, but I wasn't wearing loafers.
But that stands out for me because it was this world of civility that we know turned upside down. There you were in the ditch with this man who was your lifeline. He was your eyes and ears and voice because he was your translator. And you were in Mosul in the early part. It wasn't safe. You left. But he made that promise to you. What was that promise?
He was from Mosul, and he had fled for his life because he was Kurdish, and you know, he was a professor and a poet, and he was a dissident, and he'd been arrested and tortured a number of times. And, you know, they told him after his last arrest, next time, we'll kill you. Mm-hmm. And so he fled to Erbil, and that's where we met. But the whole time we were waiting for the overthrow of Saddam to happen, nobody doubted that it would. He would say to me every day, when we get to Mosul, I'm going to buy you a fish lunch by the banks of the Tigris. It's the best fish in the world. And he was like a Chicago guy telling a New York guy, you know, you come to Chicago, it's much better in Chicago. And, you know, he was convinced that the fish out of the Tigris in Mosul was better than the fish out of the Tigris in Baghdad. And so it became a thing for us. And I was looking forward to it. And on the day the regime collapsed, we couldn't do it because of the total anarchy we encountered. And then he was murdered. Yeah. And the following year, I went back to write a book about his life. And I thought, well, I'll have my fish lunch now, but without him. But then I ran into some jihadis. And it just wasn't possible to have the fish lunch.
Yeah. Well, your book, by the way, Ahmed's War, Ahmed's Peace, will link listeners to all of our conversations over the years. But you were able to go back with Ahmed's son, who's now a journalist?
Yeah. ISIS, Daesh, whatever you want to call them, swept into the Mosul region in June of 2014. I went back in the autumn of 2015, so that's 15 months later. And I asked him, I said, what's the situation? And he said, well, the fighting is pretty much stopped, and we can go out with the Peshmerga, the Kurdish fighters, to the front if you like. I don't mind. And so we did, and we drove, you know, roads that I had driven with his father during the course of the war, and we got as far as the Peshmerga said was safe. It was a little outpost near a town called Bashika. And so we stayed there, and I checked out the situation. And, you know, at that point, everything had kind of settled. And the Peshmerga explained that from time to time, ISIS fighters would come to this outpost and they'd have a firefight. But it was all skirmishing. It wasn't serious. No one was trying to take any territory. You know, sometimes when I reflect back, I think, geez, 2 years ago, if there had been an aggressive pushback from the beginning, they might not have been able to be so successful.
Yeah.
15, 20,000 ISIS members in putting up this kind of resistance at the end.
Well, I'm also thinking, Michael, it's quite something that you've had this experience, terrible loss of your friend and translator, Ahmed, but then able to see his son, you know, kind of step in his footsteps, even though that's how his father got killed, why his father was killed, you know, being a journalist. And I guess I'm wondering, maybe your hope is to go back to Mosul and maybe have that lunch someday with Ahmed's son, but there's no Mosul.
Yeah, well, the first part of your question, the immediate thought is inshallah, but, you know,
God willing.
I don't know when that day will be. I mean, look, the one thing I will say about Iraqis is, you know, they went through, you know, almost 30 years of totalitarian Ba'athist rule. And now they've gone through these almost 15 years of post-Saddam anarchy and violence. And yet Iraqis still have a life, amazingly. And they do find ways of going out for family meals despite risk. And so I'm hopeful, Robin, that even if it isn't a fish restaurant near the old town, that there will be a time at some point when Ahmed, and he had a lot of kids, and now they've got kids, so he's got a whole tribe that he fathered, that we can one day gather by the banks of the Tigris and have that lunch that I was supposed to have with their father.
Michael Goldfarb, we'll link you to his podcast, First Rough Draft of History, at herenow.org. Michael, thank you so much.
Robin, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
And by the way, Michael is now working on a documentary as well. It's about doctors in conflict zones. Doctors from Mosul will play a big part in his piece. As we heard earlier, they are currently taking care of children, some left behind by ISIS fighters in Mosul, many orphaned there when their Iraqi parents were killed. And of course, doctors were bombed while working in hospitals at the height of the conflict. We'll be speaking to Michael again.